Barbarians of Rome, the Germanic People, the Bronze Age, Part 3, Language and Dispersion. Now, I'm going to do the language part really simply, because there's no need to be going through the changes in all the letters. If you really want to do that, pick up one of the sources and take care of that. But in fact, there's the question is, does Germanic differ materially from other Indo-European languages? Now, the common or primitive Germanic has been reconstructed by comparing all the surviving languages of the group. It was the spoken language before the beginning of the Germanic dispersion. And there are variations on 6 or 7 different areas. And then how does this come about? Well, in the case of migration and invasion, 3 situations may arise. That is, both languages may survive. Examples, English and French in Canada, Swedish and Finnish in Finland, French, Italian, and German in Switzerland. Or 2, the invaders may adopt the language of the country invaded. Example, Bulgaria and the Normans in Normandy. 3, the invaders may establish their own language in the territory invaded. Example, Magyar in Hungary, Latin in Gaul, Celtic in Spain, Latin in Spain. Now, if the Germanic is the result of a substratum, same is probably true for other Indo-European languages which were introduced in the territories where other languages were spoken. Other languages of the stock do appear to have been affected, although the changes in the Germanic were carried through in more systematic manner than can be shown for some of the others. Several of the Indo-European Caucasian languages and Armenian are subjected to changes somewhat similar to the Germanic consonant change. It is a historical fact that Latin was introduced in the Gaul and in Spain and Romania. It was in every case approximately the same kind of Latin, that is, the common spoken language of the soldier, merchants, and colonists. These languages, however, developed along quite different lines, and changes were such that languages have long been mutually unintelligible. Differences between Spanish of the New World and of Spain had been explained as a continuation of certain phonetic tendencies in South and Central America which had already manifested themselves in the language in Spain, and there is consequently no evidence of an Indian substrata. But conditions under which Central and South American Indians learned Spanish or Portuguese can scarcely be compared with those prevailing at the time of the expansion of the Roman Empire or the circumstances prevailing when the Indo-European languages were expanding over Europe and part of Asia. We have a very modern example of a new language formed as a result of language mixture, the Pidgin English of the South Pacific. This was a combination of a restricted English vocabulary and a language without formal grammar in the Western European sense. Similar combinations of a native language and French are also known. These become a lingua franca in other circumstances different from those prevailing in the modern world, such as a lingua franca could become a standard language. This did actually happen as far as the case of the Greek Koine, which was really a language, a shortened version of Greek that was used all over because of all the trade. Now, of course, the Germanic world was much more restricted at the end of the Older Bronze Age and in the Middle Bronze period than it was during the Iron Age. In other words, it's concentrated in one particular area, but once you expand, then it comes into contact with other languages. As I said, it was a relatively closed area extending over the Danish islands, Jutland, Schleswig-Holstein, considerable part of Lower Saxony, Mecklenburg, part of Pomerania as far as the Penn River, and Rügen, southern Sweden, and a few localities in southern Norway. In a restricted area such as this, cultural fusion could be completed in a much shorter time than would have been possible over a more extended area. Now, the enlargement of the Germanic territory began, according to many authorities, around 750 BCE, but almost certainly no later than 500 BCE. It is reasonable to conclude that the formation of the Germanic language was completed before the beginning of the dispersion of the Germanic people. Attempts have been made to determine the time of linguistic changes by reference to certain loaned words which were affected. Cannabis is an example. It is claimed as a Thracian Phrygian word, meaning hemp, taken in the Greek and then introduced in the German. The change from cannabis to hemp changes the K to CH and later to H, and the B's go to P's. and the deletion of the middle vowel A show the word had been thoroughly Germanicized. But unless we know when hemp was first known to the Germanic people, the sound changes don't give us a solution for the problem of time. Furthermore, words may be borrowed from one language into another and follow the general pattern of borrowing language long after a specific series of sounds and changes may have taken place. What the English language has done to many borrowed words goes far beyond the bounds of words borrowed in similar ways by Germans. Cultural influence often follows trade. Northern Europe during the Bronze Age was outside of Southern and Central European cultural orbits, but there were nevertheless important contacts. There was some trade between North and South, and you needed to be able to communicate in trading situations. Neither tin nor copper are native to Scandinavia North. Bronze is an alloy of these metals, the best results from having been obtained by a mixture of 10% tin and 90% copper. Bronze was known and used much earlier in the Near East and in Egypt than in Europe. This must have been before 3000 BCE. At that time, there were flourishing cities in India, Mesopotamia, and Egypt, as well as in Greece and Crete. Europe at the time had just entered the Neolithic stage. The earliest trade in bronze and bronze artifacts was developed in the north, was with Italy. It's most likely that it required tin from Cornwall and perhaps also from Spain. Some copper and tin appear to have reached north from the Harz region, where both were mined. In exchange, the north could offer skins and amber. The pelts of cold-loving animals were greatly treasured in those days, just as they are today. There was an almost inexhaustible supply of amber in the North Sea and the Baltic. Amber ornaments appear early in Eastern Europe. On the basis of chemical analysis, the amber beads found in Mycenaean graves by Heinrich Schliemann came from the north. Definite trade routes were established for this exchange of commodities. These routes were, by the way, of the Vistula and the Dniester rivers to the Black Sea, much the same route that was taken later by the Viking traders, the Elbe-Moldau-Danube route, from the North Sea to the Mediterranean by way of the Rhine River and Rhone River, the maritime route by the way of the North Sea, the English Channel, and the Straits of Gibraltar. It is a curious fact that amber was no longer used so lavishly by the people of the north during the Bronze Age as during the Neolithic. The people apparently discovered that amber was much more in demand by traders from the south and elsewhere, and that they could get copper, tin, gold, and silver for it in exchange. The bronze industry developed quite early in Bohemia and Silesia, no doubt because of their strategic position on the eastern trade routes. The spiral ornamentation, which reached such a high state of perfection in the north, was probably introduced from Central Europe. After the initial period of importation and imitation, the northern artists, if they did not surpass those of the south, the artifacts shown have excellent of form, a clarity of conception, which witnesses to the high attainments for the artist. From the point of view of the artistic excellence, this was the high tide of northern Europe in the Bronze Age. Now, next we'll be moving on to pre-Roman Iron Age. So we're starting to get a little more creative in here. Now, the sources for this, the Germanic peoples, their origin, expansion, and culture by Owens, Civilization of the Celts by Luray, and the Civilization of the Steppes by Conrad. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. And ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.